Welcome to another episode of the Oncology on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Russ Conroy. Dr. Gregory Kalamkarian of the University of Michigan discussed updated systemic therapy guidelines for small cell lung cancer created by ASCO in collaboration with Ontario Health. He spoke about what these guidelines recommend across different treatment modalities such as surgery and radiotherapy, as well as data supporting novel immunotherapy options including durvalumab and atezolizumab. So the last guideline update for small cell lung cancer management came out in 2015. Since then, what kinds of developments in the field have inspired the creation of the latest guidelines?
Right. I think the major advance was the integration of immunotherapy into the treatment for people with extensive stage small cell lung cancer and the improvement in survival with improved long-term outcomes in those people who got the immunotherapy plus chemotherapy. There also have been some additions in treatment for people with relapse disease, but those have been fairly marginal at this point in time. In that time, we've got some clarifications on some radiation oncology issues. That wasn't the focus of this guideline. This guideline was really focused on the systemic therapies. And we endorsed the ASTRO guidelines pertaining to radiation oncology.
I see. And the updated guidelines here sought to address 8 different overarching clinical questions in the management of this patient population. Mm-hmm. First, what did research show about optimal adjuvant systemic treatment regimens in patients with resected disease?
Yeah, research shows very little. The data on adjuvant chemotherapy is really based on retrospective series, relatively older data, because when we look at the differences that were seen going back even before my time, so more than 35 years ago, when surgery was done for limited stage small cell lung cancer, people had terrible outcomes. Median survivals were measured in a couple of months. And then when oncologists started using chemotherapy after the radiation, after surgery, even older chemotherapy regimens, they started to see that people were now living on average much longer periods of time. And you were getting, you know, upwards of 40% of people having long-term survival, meaning essentially cured of disease. That was compelling enough data and evidence to say this is something we should be doing. Nobody ever did a randomized trial looking at surgery alone versus surgery plus adjuvant chemotherapy. Now, that said, the number of people with small cell who are eligible for surgery is really small. It's less than 5% of people have stage 1 or 2A disease in the current staging system. So tumors 5 centimeters or less with no lymph node involvement. In those people, we do believe and we still find evidence from data that suggests that adjuvant chemotherapy does improve their overall survival. With regard to what the best chemo is for that, we have absolutely no data. And, you know, we're basing our recommendations on extrapolation from more advanced disease where the platinum etoposide combinations have been a standard of care based on many trials in people with limited and extensive stage disease. We recommend 4 cycles of adjuvant chemotherapy with platinum and etoposide in the surgically resected patients.
So that covers the resected patient population. You mentioned earlier that the latest wave of immunotherapy was a source of inspiration for creating the latest guidelines. What are some of the major specific updates in immunotherapy, and how has this class of agents really impacted clinical practice?
So the main advance is with the addition of immunotherapy, particularly PD-1, PD-L1 agents, into the first-line therapy for people with extensive-stage small cell lung cancer. So the combination of chemotherapy with a platinum and etoposide combination, our old standard, plus an immunotherapy agent used concurrently, and then utilizing the immunotherapy agent as maintenance therapy afterwards. And with that, what we have seen is an improvement in the overall survival of patients. And now with further data, as we've gone further out, what we're seeing is a improvement of about 10 to 15% as we get out into the area where we generally consider long-term survival, so beyond 3 years. So it does appear that we are improving the overall outcome. And we do now have about, 10% of people or so who are out over 5 years with this treatment, which was really not something that we had ever seen before in extensive stage small cell lung cancer patients. Even though the number of people who are benefiting is not nearly as high as we would like to see it, clearly the immunotherapy does benefit a small group of people quite substantially. So that's the major advance that we have seen. Thus far, we've seen that with atezolizumab and durvalumab that are FDA-approved agents in combination with chemotherapy. There are a couple of other drugs from studies in other countries that have also demonstrated very similar outcomes with the addition to chemotherapy. So that's the major advance that we have seen. There are quite a few trials ongoing and some that have been completed, and we're just waiting for data in limited stage small cell lung cancer to see what the addition and the integration of immunotherapy does there. We're hoping that it has an improvement in survival, and in limited stage, hopefully an improvement in the cure rate long term. My guess is that it's going to be on the order of what we've seen in every other scenario with immunotherapy and small cell, that it's going to be in that 10%, 15% range of benefit, which would be a significant improvement. There also are many trials going on looking at how do we optimize and improve immunotherapy, additions of other agents with the immunotherapeutics like anti-angiogenics and others are being looked at in quite a few clinical trials. So we're hoping that this will eventually be the base that will build further advances on.
So in addition to all these developments related to immunotherapy, the guidelines also went into a little bit of detail regarding the role of radiotherapy. Are there any major updates in the role that radiotherapy may play among this patient population?
We endorsed the ASTRO guidelines for radiotherapy. The radiotherapy advances, if you will, in this stage of disease have really been in refining how to deliver radiotherapy to people with limited stage disease. Doing it early, concurrent radiotherapy is better than later or sequential. The question of whether we do hyperfractionated radiation, meaning twice a day radiation or once a day radiation, despite several trials, some of which were very well done, still remains an open question. And now either doing twice a day radiation up to a total dose of 45 gray or once a day radiation up to a dose of 60 to 70 gray, either of those is considered acceptable and probably equivalent to each other. And then you have the question of brain radiation. Small cell lung cancer, 60% of people will develop brain metastases. So the issue of, do we do prophylactic brain radiation to try and prevent symptomatic brain metastases in people? And in limited stage disease, that is a standard of care because it did improve 5 year, 3 year overall survival by about 5%. And that's essentially improving the cure rate in that disease. In extensive stage disease, there has been conflicting data on the role of PCI, prophylactic cranial radiation. And many of us, especially those in medical oncology, do not believe that it's worthwhile in extensive stage patients. And we prefer to do MRI surveillance on those individuals and then do use radiotherapy if we need it. If they develop brain metastases and kept catching it early by doing the MRI surveillance. So that's really where radiotherapy is right now.
I see. Thank you. And what do the guidelines suggest about therapy for older patients who are naive to treatment, or perhaps those who have poor performance statuses?
So for people who are older, and that's the majority of people with small cell lung cancer, majority of people with small cell lung cancer are over 70 years old. So that's the older patient population by anybody's definition of it nowadays. So so it pertains to a large number of people, and both for people with limited stage small cell as well as extensive stage small cell, we recommend standard therapy for people who are older and fit, so good performance status patients. Even patients with performance status 2, which means you need some assistance with your activities of daily living, it appears that standard treatments with for limited stage chemotherapy plus radiotherapy, for extensive stage chemotherapy plus immunotherapy, that standard treatment would be most appropriate in those individuals because small cell is such a responsive tumor to those treatments. So for fit elderly individuals, older adults, we do recommend standard therapy, standard of care. For people with poor performance status, as I mentioned, performance status 2, you have to obviously personalize therapy, but most people with performance status 2 would be reasonable candidates for standard therapy. You start getting into performance status 3 or 4 patients, and it gets a little more challenging. If their performance status is poor due to the small cell lung cancer, then because it is such a responsive disease, they usually can improve and they usually do get better. You may have to adjust the way you do your treatments. So for limited stage, perhaps you might do chemotherapy first, try to get the tumor shrunk because it does respond so well to chemotherapy. Try to get the tumor shrunk, try to get their performance status improving. You might want to dose attenuate the chemotherapy somewhat, again, because it's so sensitive. Usually that still has response and people can improve. So the idea is to get them going in the right direction, get their functional status improving, and then perhaps you can add the radiation therapy in on the back end for people at limited stage disease. For extensive stage disease, again, getting people going in the right direction with chemotherapy if their performance status is impaired due to the small cell lung cancer. So getting them going in the right direction with chemotherapy, perhaps at abbreviated doses or schedules, would be reasonable. Whether or not one adds in immunotherapy has to be a very individualized discussion and thought process with any individual patient, because immunotherapy doesn't really improve that response rate. It might improve long-term survival, but the response rate really is the same either way. So whether or not the added toxicity of immunotherapy is justifiable depends on the specific individual. You know, small cell is one of the few diseases where even when people come in and they end up on a ventilator because of obstructed airways, We still go ahead with chemotherapy because it does respond. And in my experience over the last 30 years, I have seen the majority of people that I've treated in an ICU leave the ICU and eventually leave the hospital. But obviously, you have to make that individualized judgment. If people have poor functional status, poor performance status, because of some other comorbid condition that is not going to improve with the treatment of the small cell lung cancer, then that's a different story. Then you really have to personalize treatment and perhaps adopt a more, you know, symptom management type of approach, perhaps palliative radiotherapy or some very abbreviated type of systemic therapy approach. A difference there depending on why people have a poor functional status.
Very detailed breakdown for these different patient subsets. Thank you. And what are some of the key updates related to the use of biomarkers in this patient population?
Well, that's an easy one. There are no validated biomarkers that have been shown to be useful in the treatment or management of people with small cell lung cancer. For immunotherapy, the things we think about, PD-L1 expression, TMB, have not been shown to be terribly helpful in selecting our patients. For thinking about molecular diagnostics like NGS, next generation sequencing, we do not have any approved targeted therapies that have been demonstrated to benefit people with small cell lung cancer. So in the standard care of people with small cell lung cancer, there is no role for sending either NGS or PD-1, PD-L1 testing at this point in time. There's some very interesting preclinical data on subsetting small cell lung cancers where it looks like we may be getting close to being able to identify that small group of people with small cell who benefit from immunotherapy. And hopefully within the next 5 years or so, we'll be able to target our treatments more specifically to that population. But those are not clinically relevant tests at this point in time.
Are you optimistic that we'll see progress in this department sometime in the future?
I am optimistic. I think in order to have worked in small cell for the last 30 some odd years, I've had to be somewhat optimistic. Despite some of the evidence. But I think we're going to make inroads. Are we going to make tremendously dramatic advances? Well, I certainly hope so. But, you know, small cell is a disease that is very aggressive. It is very tightly tied to smoking status. 99% of people are smokers. Because of that, they have a lot of mutations within the tumor. It's got a lot of opportunities to develop multiple mechanisms of growth, multiple mechanisms of resistance to whatever we throw at it. I am optimistic that with our better characterization, we're going to make improvements for subsets of patients. But I think we're going to need a major overhaul or new epiphany into how cancers like small cell lung cancer develop and grow, a very, very different strategy in order to take it over the hump and get to large numbers of patients being cured of this disease and of many of our other common cancers. We've clearly made inroads, the whole immunotherapy realm, the whole targeted therapy realm, all of those are major advances for small groups of people. So we just have to keep on plugging away and finding out more about what's driving these cancers to be cancers and do what they do to people.
So I try to cover a lot of ground with my questions in relation to these guidelines, covering different treatment modalities and patient subgroups, but were there any other guideline updates that you feel are worth mentioning that I didn't ask about?
One topic that is new to the guidelines is the management of people with EGFR mutant adenocarcinomas that have transformed into small cell carcinomas. This is a relatively rare phenomenon. I see a lot of people with lung cancer, and I have seen three people with this transformation to small cell. It tends to act exactly like you would expect small cell lung cancer to act. It is responsive to standard chemotherapy approaches with platinum and etoposide, so that is what is recommended. We do not generally recommend the use of immunotherapy for these patients for two reasons. One is immunotherapy doesn't work terribly well in people with EGFR mutated lung cancers. And number two, if you're using a targeted therapy along with or in proximity to immunotherapy, you greatly increase the risks of toxicities like pneumonitis or hepatitis from the immunotherapy and targeted therapies. So for the transformed small cell lung cancer patients, we do recommend standard platinum etoposide chemotherapy. The question of do you continue the targeted therapy? There is no good data to recommend one way or the other. My personal belief is yes, because the additive toxicity of chemo and targeted therapy like osimertinib is relatively low. I do continue it because I have seen in the couple of patients I've treated where not all of the cancer has transformed to small cell lung cancer, and some of it is still responsive to osimertinib, to the EGFR TKI. So I am a believer in utilizing chemotherapy for small cell along with targeted therapy for the EGFR mutant disease. So that's one new aspect of the guideline.
So overall, what do you hope practicing clinicians take away from this conversation?
Right. Well, I think what I hope people take away from is that we are making some progress. So not to be as nihilistic as perhaps many have been in the past, that we are seeing some people who are living beyond 5 years with extensive stage small cell lung cancer. That limited stage small cell lung cancer is a potentially curable disease, and that we need to treat people optimally. And that's what the guidelines hopefully offer, is an optimal way to treat patients based on the best data we have available at this time. And that we should try to tailor our treatments to our patients individually in order to give them the best chance possible of being one of those potential long-term survivors, because we're not good at predicting who those people are going to be at this point in time. So we have to look at every person and say, how can we best treat them in order to try and get them the best chance of doing as well as possible for as long as possible. So utilizing all of the weapons at our disposal in order to try and treat people optimally, both first line, second line as well, with newer agents like lurbinectedin coming down the line. Yeah, it's not the best thing since sliced bread. It's not the answer to cancer, but it is another brick in the wall, and it can help some people do somewhat better for somewhat longer. So we do have these newer agents coming down the line. There's a targeted therapy, the first targeted therapy that may be coming out, a drug called tarlatamab. That is very interesting in the relapse setting. Again, it's not going to be the answer to cancer, though some people have very good responses. And we have to learn who responds best to drugs like that as we move on down the line. But I would like people to pay attention to small cell lung cancer a little bit. You know, non-small cell has gotten a lot of the press and hype over the last 20 years or so since targeted therapy came out for that disease. Before that, we all thought small cell was where we were going to be making advances, and we were wrong. I do think that we're on the cusp of really understanding the disease better and utilizing that understanding to advance newer strategies for trying to treat these patients.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology On The Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available, or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology On The Go podcast is the official podcast of cancernetwork.com, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at cancernetwork without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at cancer-network.